This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 11. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088167691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, everybody. We are around the world again. Berners, you're on a pre-season tour.
I am. Southern Spain, blue skies. Nice to get out of the rat race of London. So I'm podcasting from a location just outside Gibraltar.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's exciting, isn't it? Good weather and an excellent way to enjoy the sun, because we're not going to get much, I'm sure, in the UK come July.
Got Le Mangre over here, a few first class teams come over here, and you often get the beer boys over in Benidorm. I've been on a tour there myself, actually. It was quite raucous fun. So there's a bit of cricket going on in Spain. I think it's one of the developing ICC nations.
And Gareth, it's a bit of a special show this week. We have Michael Bevan on the show because, of course, his online coaching course launched this week, and you can pick that up. What are your experiences with Bevo?
Well, my experiences are watching him, really, and being somebody who was a massive admirer, because you can't fault somebody who's won more games of cricket almost single-handedly in ODI cricket for his country than he's the man, isn't he? He's the man that's converted games that were in the balance or even against Australia into unlikely wins. And absolutely fantastic the way that he controlled the game, how he controlled himself and his emotions, and was able to put that into a performance. And I think many have tried to replicate over the years since he finished playing international cricket, but very few have actually sort of achieved anything like what he did.
Well, yeah, and that reflects in the number of not outs that he gets, and his average is up in the 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'd say on that is the importance about his not outs was that he actually ended up winning the games, didn't he? He was their not out when they won. A lot of people can get not outs and do it in a losing cause or when the pressure's off almost. But he did it when the pressure was on to win games of cricket for his country. And that's what stood him apart, really.
Yeah, and certainly what came across in his course was how much of a mental game batting is, especially when you're chasing a total down. You know, you have to have such clarity of purpose and his method on the course, which we've got an interview with him coming up. So you can get a little insight into that as a preview. But his whole method of practicing and way of thinking and learning and building confidence and everything revolves around this one aim of having a complete clarity of purpose when you're out in the middle.
Yeah, well, that's classic, isn't it? And you talk to people like him, you talk to Viral Dravids, and you get that sense that it isn't just accidental what happens out in the middle. Everything that they do in their preparation, in their net practice and everything is geared towards what they end up doing in the middle and doing it successfully. So, yeah, that continuity is crucial.
Yep, and it's broken down into three separate courses. So you can pick any one of those courses, or you can buy all three as a bundle. And it's consistency, which every batsman chases. Shot selection, which I know is a massively popular one, especially the number of questions we get about picking line and length and choosing the right shot and all that side of things. That's a mystery area for a lot of batsmen. And, of course, the classic, which is chasing down runs, which is what he's most famous for, I guess. But all those three are modular. They all link together, and you can try one out for size and then buy the others, or, you know, whichever way you want to do it. But I thoroughly recommend it if you're a batsman, whatever level you're at. You're always going to be in a situation where you're having to chase down runs, and wherever you bat in the batting order, it's kind of your job to be the finisher, isn't it?
I always talk about everybody's a run maker. It doesn't matter. The number that you go in at is almost irrelevant, because from my experience, if you hit a ball on the ground and it goes for four, you only get four whether you're a number 11 or a number one. So every run counts exactly the same. There's no multiplying effect which comes from batting at 6 or 8 or 10. It makes no difference. So everybody's a run maker, and it doesn't matter whether you're a top order player like Bev was, or whether you're a number 10 or 11, who actually is often in those crucial bits at the end of the game. You know, to be able to convert those games through 6-7 not out with the other guy on 40-50 and get a win out of it is absolutely crucial. And I can remember all of those games that I played in where our number 11 did exactly that, and they're the most memorable wins.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that we can all learn from that. So, take a look at those courses. So we're going to truncate this introduction so we can get more Michael Bevan for your money, which is, of course, no money on this completely free podcast. So we can go straight into the yes-no round. So every week, there's three questions. Me and Gareth can only answer yes or no, no matter how much else we want to say. Berners, you've got those this week. Fire away.
First question. Stuart Broad has found his role.
Yes.
No.
Second question. Early success is as dangerous as failure.
Yes.
No.
Third question. It's okay to coach different techniques for the same skill.
Yes.
Yes.
Gracias, senor.
Here we are in Sydney. I've travelled halfway across the world to interview Michael Bevan for his upcoming course on Pitch Vision Academy. So welcome along to the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show, Michael Bevan.
Thanks, David. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to sharing some tips and tricks and some performance secrets on this upcoming podcast.
Okay, so let's get into the interview.
What is your attitude to practice?
What is my attitude to practice? I think the quality of the practice needs to be there. So however you intend to play in a match is the way you need to practice. And conversely, if you're practicing correctly, it will show up when you play. So you need to do it right. And I think you need to have a focus at practice. And sometimes you can complicate yourself. Sometimes you can think about too many things. Sometimes you get sidetracked. But what I like to do is either focus on one thing, whether it's technical, whether it's a shot, whether it's a body part or a movement that I can devote my time completely to, concentrate on it for the session, drill it for 50 balls or 100 balls till it becomes second nature from a technical perspective. Or when I practice, I like to focus on match situation. So you're not really concentrating on a technique, but you're making sure you're making the right decisions, sticking to your strengths, and of course watching the ball from the bowler's hand and letting your reactions take over. And so particularly at the back end of my career, I really wanted to achieve something. I wanted to make sure I had the correct focus for it to be worthwhile. You don't want to go through the motions at practice.
Thinking about technique, the technical side of things, how important is technique to master compared to other elements of the game?
How important is technique in terms of helping you achieve performance with your cricket? It is important. You know, you have three or four really important aspects of cricket performance that will help you succeed. Technique is one of them. You definitely need to get the basics. And what I mean by that is there are a couple of things that are necessities in terms of what you want from a technical perspective. One's balance, one's power, and one's safety. And so it is important. What you've got to work out is there something more important that I could be working on? Is there something that is holding me back at this point in time that I need to address? And so that's the important decision that I have to make when I'm batting, or when I was batting, or when I was practicing. And that's the decision that people who are looking to improve have to make. So it is very important, and you should spend some time on it, but you need to understand when to do that.
And what would make up a typical practice session for you?
What would make up a typical practice session for me if I was working on technique? Again, I think you want your setup right. You want to be balanced. And so you need to concentrate on your head position at ball release. You need to concentrate on your trigger movements. For me, it was a little step forward or no movement at all. For me, the things that I worked on towards the back end of my career was my back lift, my hands in relation to my body, and how close they were. But I also spent a lot of time working on the short ball and playing the hook shot and learning how to do that. And so for me, a practice session regarding around that would revolve around ball machine at 60 or 70 miles an hour, aimed at my head, and I would really concentrate on getting the swing plane right, extending my arms, and ensuring that I was getting my hips moving and rotating. But of course, I wouldn't work on all of those at once. And so I would concentrate on one facet of the shot, make sure that the body movement was correct, and ensuring that I was getting the result that I wanted. So from a technical perspective, it didn't matter what shot I was working on, but I had to choose a body part and a body movement and make sure that I drilled it, got it right, and it felt comfortable so I didn't have to think about it.
Okay, so thanks very much to Michael Bevan for spending a day with us in Sydney. That was great fun, and you can get more Michael Bevan goodness if you head over to pitchvision.com/finisher. Now we're going to go into the perennial question section on the show. Every week we have two questions, the best one of which wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Bernard, you've got the two questions this week.
I do. Our first question comes in from Stephen, and he's just spoken to some of the senior players at his club, and they've decided to get a leader for both the bowling group on and off the pitch. So he's saying that he thinks that it's obviously good to have someone in this role to lead the warm-ups and discussing ends to take, especially when they play away from home, and how to bowl on different surfaces on that particular day. So he's just saying that how this might kind of work day to day, because a lot of the other coaches are involved in the other teams on a Saturday. So he's wondering if you guys have got any experience of this kind of leadership within the amateur game.
Well, from my experience, I find that this kind of thing tends to happen naturally if you've got one or two people with the right attitude within the side, because, you know, it's often talked about this concept of everyone in the team is a leader. You've got one captain, but everyone in the team is a leader. If you get the right dynamic right, I think you get that kind of leadership from a group without really having to formalise it at all. Maybe if it's not happening naturally, then formalising it and saying to one of the senior bowlers, you are the senior bowler, you are in charge of A, B and C, and have your bullet points. That could work for certain types of people. I've never experienced that myself. But I think it's a great idea for specialists to get together and work things out for themselves. The one area that I might caution against is what you don't want to do is make it into a splinter group where it's even more the batsmen versus the bowlers, and suddenly you get factions within the side. But I've never seen that happen. Have you ever seen it done formally like this, Gareth?
Yeah, I have actually, and it works. And Australia did it for years. The McGraths, Gillespies, Lee, and people like Andy Bickle, they had their fast bowlers club. And what they did was get their fast bowlers group to go out on nights out, to do training sessions together, and just spent as much time around each other as they possibly could. And their roles were to make sure that their preparation was absolutely spot on, to make sure that their batting preparation was done properly, because they wanted to see how many runs the batting group could get that contribute to a game of cricket, which I thought was a fantastic idea. And also, they looked after the guy who was going to be left out, because obviously in a touring group, you would always have one or two fast bowlers that would be left out. So it was a responsibility of the group to make sure that everybody in there was working hard towards the goals for the team, not just the three people that were going to be playing as a seam bowling attack, Also everybody. So the other two that weren't playing would be supporting the guys out on the pitch by making sure their drinks bottles are always full and all those sort of things that go around a peak performance for a fast bowling group. So I think it's a really good idea. The thing that I would say on it is less is more, really, because there's a number of things that you've mentioned on this list, Stephen, about organising gym sessions together, you know, how to bowl in games, prehab and warm-ups and what have you. I would really try and narrow it down to one or two things that you could improve very, very quickly initially. Get those right, and once you've got those right, then you can add other bits and bobs onto it. The danger sometimes is that we have all of these good intentions, but there's so many good intentions listed down at the beginning that ultimately we find it really difficult to manage it in the real world when we're actually getting involved in competition. So choose the two or three key things that you want that group to achieve first. Get those nailed down. Make it part of your habitual running of your life and running of your games of cricket and your practices, and then add on top of it rather than trying to do everything all in one go.
Have you ever seen the power dynamic of it not work, where the bowlers just become sort of this insular group who are, you know, no longer open to to anyone else?
I think that's a challenge in any change room. I've certainly seen that happen. There were some change rooms that I was around in the early 2000s that weren't particularly good in that regard, and the batters would blame the bowlers and the bowlers would blame the batters. I think the thing that's really helped that process now are stats. Because stats actually tell you how each element is going. So instead of it being the batters accusing the bowlers are not going, actually you can go straight to the bowlers and just say, look, you know, at the moment we're getting through the top three really well, but we're not finding a way of getting the last six wickets. Now, what could be the common denominators between that? Are we not looking after the ball well enough? Are we not hitting our lengths well enough in this phase? And instead of it being just an emotional argument between batters and bowlers, there's some factual data that sits behind it that often takes the gas out of those arguments. So that's been the big change in cricket for me since the early 2000s, where the batters would blame the bowlers and the bowlers would blame the batters. You now can't, because the stats actually define who's been doing what, and more importantly, good coaching or good leadership, whether it be a captain or a coach, can get down to the real things that you want to work on that actually help you to get better, and that deflates any sort of emotional argument that could have happened in the early years.
Yeah, the captain is crucial in this, isn't he? Because you don't want a captain who has lost control. You want a captain who is still in control of the situation, but is also able to delegate responsibility for certain tasks to people who he can trust. It takes a good captain, and it also takes people who are prepared to take on that kind of responsibility and do it in a way that the captain knows, well, I can leave that up to them and not have to worry about it.
But it's very rare, isn't it, in a team of 11 people or 12 people that you don't have those people within it that have that capacity to lead, to take responsibility, you know. Very rarely have I been involved in a team that hasn't had people in there that are willing to take responsibility and to go above and beyond, because that's ultimately why we play team sports. So I've seen many captains want to control everything and as a result stifle other people's opportunity to be leaders within within their team. Very rarely do you have one captain and 10 followers that are incapable of leading certain elements of the program or elements of the day whenever you're playing a match against an opposition. So I always say, let's give it the best we can. Let's look at the people that we've got within our team, and let's give them responsibility because ultimately we'll achieve more if that happens.
I'd go further. I'd say that most people kind of have leadership, some kind of leadership aspiration in somewhere in their mind, even if they've got no desire to make a play for the captaincy. They still might think to themselves, I could do that. So a little bit of responsibility is can go a long way with most people.
Okay, next question's in from Rahil. He's having issues with his form. He's saying the more he practices, the less he scores in the actual live game. He's doing a lot of work on the machine and has one team practice a week. He just wants to know how he can convert all this hard work in the net to the actual outcomes on the field.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start by breaking up the question, as I do sometimes. Form. Andy Flower would say there's no such thing as form. When you're not scoring runs, and you've done it over a few weeks or a few games where you're not scoring runs, there's normally a blooming good reason for it. So if you get back to the basics of your game, then you'll probably find which one of those isn't actually working at that time. And then if you focus on that, then you give yourself a better chance of scoring runs the next time you go out to bat or within the next few innings. So that would be his view, and I subscribe to that. I'll be brutally honest. And I think people hide behind form sometimes and actually break your game down. What is important to you when you're going well? What is it that you do? What aren't you doing that you normally do when you're going well? And let's really attack that area. So then the question of the more I practice, the less I score in games is a fascinating one. So if you're practicing and searching for the answer to get you back into form, then you probably are going to practice quite a lot without it being particularly deliberate or particularly focused. And you're probably going to end up getting yourself even more into a bother. So really work out what it is that you're not doing right and attack that area. And you'll probably find that you don't have to practice it very much because it'll all come back into play and it'll click. The other side of the argument is, Graham Gooch always used to say if he wasn't scoring runs, he would practice less and then allow himself to be natural. And if he was scoring runs, then he would practice more to extend his period where he was scoring runs on a consistent basis. So there's two slightly different views from Andy Flower and Graham Gooch, but actually a combination of those two could probably get you going in the right direction. Form doesn't exist. It's all about your basics. Find out what it is and work on it really, really hard for a short period of time, and you'll find that things click into place. And equally, when you are in form, make sure you stay in form, or make sure you stay scoring runs for as long as you can by practicing harder and harder and harder when things are going well.
I would agree with you about the form thing. I think that certainly the definition of form that most of us have in our heads is some kind of external force, which is either applied on you or not, like gravity. You know, if you're on the earth, gravity is being applied upon you externally, but that doesn't apply to form because form is more of an internal thing. So form, by that definition, I completely agree with you there, Gareth. It is something that people can use as an excuse. Oh, well, I'm just out of form. I'll just have to bide my time until form comes back. Well, that isn't how it works at all. When it comes to practicing, I also agree with you that practice is an area which is very individual, and you need to work out, first of all, exactly what it is, like you said, but you also need to work out how much you don't need to do. And that's the Graham Gooch thing, isn't it? It's this whole idea of, in fitness, for example, you don't, your fitness doesn't improve while you're training, it improves between sessions while you're resting. And there's just a similar thing with learning any skill. Your ability to learn the skill is compensating between those sessions. If you start training every day, 3 hours a day, suddenly you might find that you're going backwards purely because you haven't got time to incorporate all the new things that you're trying to do. So if practice isn't working, I wouldn't blame practice full stop. I would blame... not blame, but I would look at the way that you're practicing. Maybe, as you said, Gareth, maybe try and focus on a different area, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but get a little bit more mindful with it. I'd like to know what kind of practice he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely right. And also, you know, get him to identify what it is that he does when he's actually scoring runs, when he feels most confident. Because if you go down a tick list, right, So these are the things that I do when I'm playing at my very best. What am I doing now? And you'll probably find that there'll be two of those, or one or two of those attributes. And they won't be, you know, you might have a list of six, but one or two of them might not actually be happening at that given time. Well, if that's the case, then that's the thing that you practice. And, that sort of way of thinking makes that searching for what is wrong a very, very short process, and that makes it efficient, and also it gives you control of that situation rather than searching for that proverbial form, which in my view, and more importantly in somebody like Andy Flower's view, doesn't actually exist.
Form is a fascinating area, and practice is a fascinating area as well, isn't it? You know, how a lot of people again think that there's sort of a direct linear relationship between how well you do and how much you practice. But it's not just about the quantity, it's about the quality.
Correct.
Okay, so box time, and this week Gareth gets a minute to talk about any subject that he likes. Gareth, over to you for this week's soapbox.
Yeah, well, in England, and I know this doesn't apply at this moment in time to everybody, but in England we're getting into the last few weeks of preparation before get outside and start playing the game. And it's fascinating to watch different coaches go about that last few weeks. And one of the things I'm very keen on is balance and balance in the programme, because we've done lots of batting and bowling over the winter in indoor halls in the UK. That's really important that we get some fielding time, because inevitably, first game that you play, you'll be out in the field, it might be a bit cold, or your hands might be a bit soft, and the ball will come to you off somebody who's worked hard bowling all winter, and you end up spilling it, and all of a sudden we're off to a bad start. So I like to see coaches that do the balance and get lots of fielding in before we get out there in the game, because there's nothing worse than picking up a bruise through bad technique in the first week of the season. So get out there, coaches, get started doing some fielding, get the shoulders going, get the stumps being hit out the ground, and see what impact that has over the first few games of your new cricket season.
Okay, so that's the end of the show for this week. Berners has already donned his sombrero and headed off riding a donkey into the distance. But before we do the same thing, we are going to pick a winner for this week's competition. So we had two questions. Stephen's question about bowling unit leadership, and Raheel's question about form, if it really exists. So Gareth, which one did you prefer?
I'm going to go for Stevens this week. I really like the question, actually. It is possible. And we went from getting people to lead the bowling group to just general responsibility over the group of players that you have, and trying to give people responsibility. And often there's very positive outcomes that come from that. So Raheel's question was excellent. Thank you for that, Raheel. But this week, Stephen is the winner.
Congratulations, Stephen. Hopefully things are going to come off for you in the UK season, because I know you emailed us from the UK. Now, Gareth, as Berners has already vanished, have you got the contact details there for someone wanting to send in their question?
I certainly have, David. It's 0208 816 7691 on the phone, and coach@pitchvision.com on the email.
Yeah, it is. And of course, that if your question is chosen by Gareth, then you win the online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And why not choose Michael Bevan as your option? Because you can head over to pitchvision.com/finisher and find out about the kind of things that Michael Bevan is teaching you on his online coaching videos and his worksheets over there. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at PB Cricket Coach, and we're still posting videos to Facebook. Funny things, entertaining things, coaching things. It seems like since we've been posting videos, everyone is a technical genius. the number of replies we get on a video where something is technically wrong is amazing. It's judging by the comments, it's you know, there's a lot of extremely good either technical coaches or technical players out there, because we get a heck of a lot of comments on the technical side of things. But have a look at that. Head over to Pitch Vision Academy on Facebook and you'll find us there. That'll keep you busy for the rest of the week. But until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.